Microsoft is like the perfect name, right? Because it's like, oh, it's a tiny little soft thing. It's like a puppet.
Yeah. You know,
it's like right. a little kitten. And then it will rip your damn face off. It will kill you.
It will enterprise you to death.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content at Stack Overflow, here with my wonderful co-host, Paul.
Hey, Ben. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, Ben. Hey, you know, we were talking about before, but you guys are in the news. You got an $85 million infusion.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, right into the old veins.
Congratulations. That's nice. Thank you. Those are good. Yeah,
that's
I like
nice.
It. Oh, God. Every time I've had an $85 million infusion, I am like ready for the gym. I am so happy.
At least 3 days. Yeah.
The high doesn't wear off for at least 3 days.
You know, if anyone could raise money during a pandemic at Stack Overflow, very necessary.
Well, it's also a nice vote of confidence in the enterprise products. Like it's a good, you know, you're seeing your advisors say, yeah, at your scale, there will be growth with your custom products. And was it Stack for Teams?
Stack Overflow for Teams.
Stack Overflow.
There we
for
go.
Team.
There we go. Yeah. So yeah. little ad. Even though I don't work for Stack, a little ad there. Stack for Teams. It's got the vote of approval of the venture capital community.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's pretty interesting. Stack Overflow. We're on our Series E, and we've been up.
So am I personally. I'm also personally on my Series E.
I'm on my Series G.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not a lot of companies that have been private for that long that are still sort of taking venture and, you know, angling eventually to do an IPO. We're one of a small handful. But yeah, Stack Overflow for Teams, the product didn't exist 2 years ago. So the decision to do that and to make it the focus has definitely helped the company turn a certain corner and sort of reaccelerate into a good level of growth that is, you know, attracts venture capital. So that's fun.
Yeah. Nothing says party like the word enterprise.
That is true. Nothing says party like that.
Paul, I heard you were coding in bed last night.
Oh, this is sad. First of all, I want to give my pro tip about enterprise software, which is you cannot learn what it is or what it does from their websites. Because you go and it'll say, you'll be like, what is blah, blah? And it'll be like, blah, blah is the ultimate integrated synthesis tool for mid-scale market marketers. And you'll be like, somebody told me I had to check this out and now I don't know what it is. You know where you can learn about enterprise software and what it really is?
Where?
YouTube.
Wait, really?
Yeah. If you like, I bet you've said to yourself, what is SAS? What is, Sarah? Come now. What is like, you know, what is Salesforce Enterprise Cloud, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can actually go see demos and people will do sort of tutorials and showcase all of that software to get the clicks. And it's very,
that's
very
the dark
useful.
Pattern, Paul. If on the landing page, you sort of say what it is, but it's confusing. And then if you want to know more, you have to put your email in so one of our salespeople can reach out.
They're doing the branding and the marketing, and they know that you're the branding and the marketing, and they know you're going to have to get in there and ask them things, and then they'll have you in the funnel, right? So they don't want you to see too much.
Just download the ebook if you want to learn more.
Yeah, because if you see this piece of software, you will be, you might not be as excited.
Tune in for the webinar.
Anyway, sorry. So just, you know, you say enterprise and suddenly about 4,000 synapses go off and I have to get it out before I can continue. The thing that Sarah is making fun of me for is that last night, so my bed in this time of troubles is about a foot from my desk, or actually they touch, but I'm about, you know, a foot from my bed when I'm on this podcast. And I have a nice computer with lots of screens and I feel good about it. Well, two screens, but they're big. And I went to bed last night and I've been working on a little problem, just like a little Python thing. And I was like, you know, I want to solve that, but it'll wait till the morning. And then I got in bed and I couldn't quite get it out of my head. So what would someone who was 3 feet away from their computer do? Obviously, I got up. No, I did not. I instead was like, no, don't get up, man. You can't get up. But you can secure shell to your desktop from my phone, from my Pixel 4. Cutting edge Pixel 4, you can secure shell using the Term UX software and open up Emacs on the desktop through SSH, and you can solve the little problem that way. And so I did that, and it took about 3 or 4 times longer than if I'd gotten up and just done it myself.
You know, this is both good and bad. It's extremely lazy that you didn't get up the 3 feet to just do it a faster way, but nice that you could code from a bed or a hammock or outside, right? Like you could, if you had a little problem that popped in your mind and you found the solution, you could secure shell in and just do it from the bus.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. But yeah, but the bed, I don't know.
See, this is the thing. It wasn't lazy because I was like, I could just get up and do this. Obviously, it's 2 inches away. It was, and I couldn't really sleep. I was having trouble sleeping, but I was like, don't you get up and get in front of that big screen because that'll keep you up for another hour and a half. It was already midnight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So instead, I'm like, do something more complicated on a little screen with 4-point type. And, but anyway, you know, I did
it. You know what I did, Paul, that I felt bad about? Also, I felt guilty, but it was a similar thing. I go to this like little swimming hole near my house with my kids. And that's like the one place we have no cell service. So it's like, you can't work there. You can't check Instagram. You got to be tuned out, right? Like just hanging with nature, hanging with your kids. But I pulled a few documents into Google Docs offline, and then you can work on them. And then as soon as you get signal, all those changes
get made.
Yeah. And so that was kind of fun. I just like pull it up when I have an idea, do a little, type a few sentences, leave a few comments, go for a swim.
See, that's what it was supposed to be. And then you would go back and you would fax from the beach. Like that was what we were promised.
Fax from the beach.
Instead of like perpetual.
Use your car phone.
Yeah. Oh, just man. Perpetual connectivity at Ben Popper's Holler. That wasn't the dream. The dream was that you'd actually be able to go into nature, but still do things.
I met the ultimate tech nature man yesterday, Rob Kalin of Etsy. He was like an art student. He decided that it was really crummy that there was no place on the internet to sell things that were specifically like handmade and artisanal. He found a couple of engineers to like make it with him, and he created a multi-billion dollar company. And then like, I think in 2015 or something, he left Etsy, and now he just lives up here in Catskill, and he's running a huge biodynamic farm, and he built a bakery. And it's like,
Is it biodynamic? Biodynamic is where you have to have like a witch bless your grapes. Are you sure it's biodynamic?
Yeah, it's kind of like your ketamine shaman thing, but it's for growing grapes. No, biodynamic farming is where like you don't bring in like extra fertilizer and chemicals. You like have animals that, you know, make the fertilizer from poop.
Oh,
you, like, grind
chicken
up trees.
Tractor.
Yeah, chicken tractor, exactly. You do the natural cycle. You don't add artificial fertilizer or chemicals. That's
so,
all.
So chicken tractor, you make a cage for your chickens, but it's on wheels so that they can roll around and eat and poop on your farm. And that way, no, it's like, there's like, you know, like 10 chickens just like trotting around living their lives, and they're in a relatively large cage. Like it's big.
The proud owner now of a chicken tractor. So I can tell you all about it.
Wait, do you have chickens or just the tractor part?
I just bought this new house and it came with 8 chickens, 2 turkeys and 3 guinea fowl. And there's a big, like huge field out back full of grass. And the woman we bought it from had a bunch of horses. So that horses ate all the grass, but now it's just birds because we're not keeping the horses.
Got to get the chicken tractor out.
Got to get the chicken tractor, exactly. So every day they basically are on a new 10-foot square. They eat that up. They poop on that, which is good. And then the next day you move them to the next 10-foot square, like little tiles in a SimCity game or something.
No, it sounds like, what was that click to farm game on Facebook?
Farmville.
Sounds very Farmville.
Yeah, but no, it's a little different in that it's a farm. It's a little different.
It's pretty similar.
No, it's pretty much
clicking and tiles. Yeah,
one's the same. You know, just, you know, Ben is arranging his entire farm into hexagons. Nobody's sure why, but it's cool. This is the fantasy, right? The code farmer, like the person who can like go out in the woods and they have that one little room where that looks out over something where they do their coding and their Usenet posts. Like that's another longstanding dream.
I mean, it is amazing. I was saying this to Rob yesterday, but like we just had this big company all hands and it was to discuss the funding. So that's an hour where back in the day I would have been sitting at my desk at the office, maybe, you know, listening to the call and looking at Twitter. And yesterday I listened to the call for an hour and like cleared a huge amount of brush. Like nobody needs me to speak on that call, but I got to listen. And so I'm like outside doing, you know, labor under the hot sun, participating in the digital economy.
Sarah, what have you been into lately? What have you been reading about?
So today I got deep into the universe of the Word software and where it came from.
Oh, really? All the way back to the beginning. You're like, I need to know what this is. How do they even name
this? How do computers work? Why do we call them that? That kind of stuff.
Where did it come from?
So I was reading this guy, Paul Niket's blog, and he mentioned that in October 1953, he kind of just said it as a joke.
Whoa. Okay. So wait, Paul Niket's blog, he was doing the, he was around in 1953 doing software.
Yeah, that was the year my dad was born. Mm-hmm. So that was a while ago. He was writing programs for the SWAC at UCLA, which was one of the 16 digital computers in the whole US. He had an epiphany and he was struck by the word software and he thought it was really funny. And then he said it out loud at some point and no one really got it. But he would usually, everyone's like, who's this guy talking about? But he would put it in like speeches and lectures and it kind of took off.
I'll be damned.
Niket gets credit, according to The Guardian, for saying it out loud and using it in speeches in 1953. And then John Tukey gets credit for being the first to put it in a paper. So it printed when people were like, could look at it.
Oh,
and it was like
fascinating.
Official.
Just really interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, my God. It's just like we're living history is just happening. What do you think? I mean, what could we have called it, right? Like, it's like, oh, they were just talking one day and now we're all living in the software industry.
Just like beep, boop, beep, boop, beep.
It'd be so cool if it was called like Go Computer or machine thingy. I mean, just like there are other
computer
ways.
Speak. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm
going to go in lots of ways.
I'm a computalker.
I'm a computalker. I am.
Oh, what else could we have? I'm a digithinker. Like, I mean, we really, it just goes to show you it's never too late to rebrand, right? We could get away from software.
We all called them software programs, right? Programs and files. And then when Steve Jobs came back around with the branding that was his like magic, he called them apps. And now like my kids don't know what a software program is. They only know what an app is.
No, they know what an
app is. Oh, fascinating. So one thing we could talk about is how a lot of the big tech giants had to go in front of Congress yesterday.
So I was busy yesterday, so I was only able to watch it through Twitter, which
is there another way to watch it?
I have to say, watching the tweets, it went very predictably. Like, it was just like, and then they said nothing, and then they said nothing in another way. And then everyone kind of gave up in the media world and was like, let's talk about what's in the background at their houses.
Because the most important thing that happened is Jeff Bezos tried to talk and was on mute. So it was a successful video conference. Somebody always has to try to talk and be on mute.
You know, that's what Congress gets for using Microsoft Teams.
Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute. It was really weird because it was like it was the Zoom panel tile and they were all in different rooms and each one of them had, you know, a specific aesthetic that they were projecting to say like, you can trust me. I'm not a, you know, titan of industry crushing competition. They all chose a different
look. I'm a nice young man.
You know, I have to say too, the news came out like a day before that Bezos's ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, had given away something like $7 billion. To a list of charities that anyone with even a remotely bleeding heart, which I know includes me and Sarah and Ben, is just like, yeah, okay, absolutely. She did it in an highly accountable way where she focused on, you know, if it's charities to support people of color, they're run by people of color. If it's charities to support women, they're run by, like she clearly got great advice as to how to achieve philanthropic impact, is pledging to give away most of her unbelievably vast fortune, and then came out of the gate swinging. This is a strange thing to say. It's surprisingly hard to give a lot of money away. In the course of my career, I've met people who literally, that's their job, is to help billionaires give money away and like start not-for-profit software enterprises and so on, because the billionaires have so much money and it's accruing at such a rate that it's kind of boring to spend it.
Yeah, so it's just kind of a pain.
Yeah, they're like, another one of these charities? I don't know. And so the smart thing to do is you just get like good professional advice. In the same way that you would invest your money, you get good professional advice about impact for philanthropy. And then you just open the floodgates. She nailed it. Anyway, so what I love is like in the background, you got people are going, Jeff Bezos could actually solve world hunger, which again, same problem. Like, it's not like he could transfer $20 billion from a bank account to the world hunger bank account.
Yeah, and it would fix the people. Yeah.
He doesn't want to deal with it, right? Like, that's just where he's at right now. But meanwhile, his ex is just like, everyone who's annoyed with him in the world is like, oh, the wrong one got control of Amazon. And and now he's in front of Congress and he's muted. There's an interesting character in all this, too. There's Tim Bray, who was a VP at Amazon and quit because he felt that Amazon was suppressing the unionization effort, especially around warehouses. And he was really troubled by it. And he's one of the co-inventors of XML. Like, he goes really, really deep. He's a good dude. Mm. So it's,
was he
it's
there yesterday testifying or no?
No, that would be amazing. That would be, I would have stopped everything to watch that. Like if you tell me one of the dad of XML is going on the stand, I'm there. That's like my dream.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos wrote this long statement to the committee, which is about his life and like how he's the son of a single mother who had to work really hard. She like had him in high school and did all this stuff to support him while having a job. And then he had like an adopted father from Mexico and he lived with his grandparents. It was like the, you know, I pull myself up by the bootstraps.
And his biological dad is a professional unicyclist. I don't know if that ever, that people don't talk about that very much, but that's real.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
That wasn't in the letter. No, that wasn't in the letter.
I don't think they've ever met. It's one of those weird things. But anyway, it's just like that, that gets in your head when you read it.
So his story, you know, his story is basically trying to say like, look, you know, I made it because America allows people to be entrepreneurial. And, you know, I don't think any further regulation is needed here. I'm proof that, you know, anybody could succeed. When I left my job at the bank in New York, they were like, you're crazy. What's the internet? But I did it anyway. It wasn't preordained success. But I do think it's pretty clear from all the evidence they gathered. Looking at all the evidence that they gathered, because they actually did quite a deal of work on this, you know, to gather evidence for the antitrust. Is that in the age of the internet and every company has a tech department and every company is on the cloud and you can launch an app one day and it can be big in 75 countries around the world in a week, like those network effects definitely amplify the issues of monopoly power that weren't true back when Bezos started Amazon and nobody knew what the internet was, right?
Look, I mean, you need, when you have volatile systems, they are not going to self-regulate. You need a government to step in and regulate. Unfortunately, I just think that when it comes to tech, an enormous amount of our government are just complete chowderheads and they can't advocate for classically democratic or classically Republican strategies. They don't even know.
It's so frustrating because it's like one of those things where it's funny. There's this old clip, Sensenbrenner, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Who is like talking to Mark Zuckerberg and he's like, how did you take Donald Trump Jr.'s account? Why did that happen? And Mark Zuckerberg was like, well, I think you're talking about Twitter and I'm not that guy. But like, come on. Like this, I feel like this joke happens every time there's one of these hearings, like the series of tubes thing. If you don't understand how the internet works or what the internet is or any of those things, why are you leading the country? This is just insane. Like it's our chief export. The chief export of the US is internet.
Well, here's what's real, right? You have your agriculture advisor. You know, if you're in Nebraska or Iowa, like you have agriculture people on your staff who tell you what's up. And I think what needs to happen is that every single elected representative at a certain level needs their internet advisor.
That guy trying to explain stuff to you, I mean, that's not fun.
Also, no, plugs in your printer and resets your Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Yeah, that is the problem, right? Is that the internet advisor. It's like, hey, I know you have a degree from Stanford, but boy, I cannot get my daughter's pictures on this iPhone.
You could just print out those emails. So I can underline it. Yeah, no, the thing that happened, Sarah, yesterday with the Twitter, Facebook, this has happened literally before. There was a huge Senate panel with like four or five of these big internet titans, and somebody started complaining about how their little niece had gotten to a really nasty website on their iPhone, and they were talking to Sundar Pichai, and he was like, I think you're talking to the wrong guy. I work at Google. Like, this is a repeat, like it's deja vu of another big internet hearing.
Well, we're in this very surreal zone where you've got four people who basically control, you know, you've got all these people who basically control state level actors with their giant companies. And then you've got people who still think that they're there to fix the printer. And it's just like, it's really awkward because really what you're seeing is like, it's this moment where this thing that everybody thought worked for them has come back and is now the boss, and like, but it's still because like, the government used to be your boss. The tech titans are like, you know, I still kind of admire him. Like he helped me get my start by creating the internet. Like, you know, I respect this Uncle Sam, but let's be honest, I have a lot more money and power than any one of these people in front of me. It's just an awkward interaction. And you know, it's going to end in probably incredibly bad regulation that's ineffective, and I want to be more optimistic in that, but bleh.
All right, y'all, I just shared a lifeboat in our Slack chat. This seems like one of the most classic examples of how I think Stack Overflow was envisioned to work. Somebody says, I wrote this code. It doesn't seem to work. Can somebody help? And somebody literally just like says, like, here's what you wrote. Here, try writing this. I think maybe it'll help.
What an angel.
Take a look at this question. Tell me if you think it's an interesting question or answer, and then we'll shout out the lifeboater.
Non-standard syntax. They're all interesting questions. Every question is Stack Overflow.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a non-interesting question.
They're all Ben. Your babies. All of them.
Okay, well, since this is all Greek to me, I have to ask you if this is interesting and let you opine on it a little bit.
I mean, it's just a little C syntax. And you know what? A little challenge about function call parentheses. I'm happy to see it. Non-standard syntax. Use and to create a pointer to member.
Oh, look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also nice because Tomer, who asked, has only 83 reps, so a relatively new user. Glad that
it's the nice thing about it is Julian DeClerc, who just jumped in here, was just like, you missed some paren. And that, I mean, haven't we all?
And then,
haven't we all?
And then Survival Machine came in on July 20th and took it all the way home. So really.
Took it all the way home.
This is
what a home
community
run.
At its best. Oh, good lifeboating. You know, before we go, I have a recommendation, which is go to the Association for Computing Machinery's, the communications of the ACM, their magazine. There's an article I read that actually is really like, I really liked and answered a lot of very vague questions that I've had for a while. It's by Jess Frizzell, and it's about data center.
Oh, she's an angel.
I don't know her, but I mean, I follow her on Twitter, I'm glad to know. It's about data center power usage, which is actually one of those things that doesn't come up a lot in the tech industry, but this is a non-green industry, right? Like, and the world's a mess. And it's just a primer, right? I read it and I went, oh, okay. That's how the cloud services are using electricity, and that's where the electricity goes. And it's stuff like DC to AC conversion and so on. But I've tried to actually get a mental model about that stuff, and I've never been able to. So power usage in your data center, a nice article that will help you understand what's going on in the world. Pretty good.
Very cool. All right, we'll throw that in the show notes. I have one more. GPT3examples.com is full of fun examples now of people who put this to use. And if you guys missed it, Farhad Manju let GPT-3 write his column this week and asked readers if they can tell the difference. So
I mean, maybe not for the first time.
No.
Who knows? We'll find out years later.
Yeah, exactly. So you can use it here to copy a bunch of text and just let it generate a presentation for you with Google Slides. It can make a JavaScript API. It can write marketing copy, apparently. So I guess I'm in luck. You give it a few examples and it'll start writing your ads for you. Yep, I'm out of a job.
Be careful when it gets... It's going to get unleashed on Stack. Someone's going to make some weird bot.
We have moderators. Moderators won't let that happen.
But then your bots will be... Your moderators will end up being GPT-3 too. It's so bad.
Oh, no.
Eventually, it'll just be GPT systems talking to GPT systems. And we can get... Well, factoring the humans out, not a bad idea.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And then they can pay each other in Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's important to get on record with a podcast like this that we respect the AI, and if it comes to dominate us all as a species, that we were first to say that'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've decided all the robots will have crushes on me, and I'm going to be fine.
I think they'll just make me write and explain things while in like a cave. They'll be like, explain this. No, please. I'm so tired. My hands don't work. Explain it.
Yeah, they just yell at you about art. They're still trying to figure that out.
Just, you. No, they'll be like, you, journalist, explain this. No, I can't. I don't understand how it works. Explain it.
Right.
I love this dystopian futures where only the journalists are alive and they just explain things.
That would be amazing. That's entirely real. They just resurrect us to explain things.
Yeah. The lifestyle journalists and the art critics. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Turns out that was the only career that mattered.
Yeah.
The only career that mattered. All right. Thanks for listening. We had a lot of fun. We explored a lot of territory. Shout out to our lifeboaters and shout out to folks who are planning with GPT-3. Again, if you have something interesting you want to share with us, you can always email us podcast@stackoverflow.com. Maybe we'll talk about it on the show or bring you on to chat with us. So I'm Ben Popper, director of content here at Stack Overflow, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Popper.
And I'm Sarah Chips, director of community at Stack Overflow. If you're a robot, I can tell you where the guy that keeps kicking over the Boston Dynamics robots live.
I'm Paul Ford, and you know when Roko's Basilisk shows up, I am ready. I always believed in and loved you Please, please don't resurrect my consciousness. Just let it rest. But if you need me, well, check out my company. I'm the co-founder of Postlight.com. That would be really cool if you check that out. Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.